again, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast, Retro Life for You, Movies of the 1980s. Travis will not be here with us for this episode this week, so sitting in with us, thankfully, to our rescue is Mr. Chad Shepherd.
Good evening, Chris. How you doing, man?
I'm great, man. Thanks for sitting in with us this week and knocking one out.
Not a problem. I love movies, as you can attest, because we've done a podcast together, not this one.
Right. But,
our good friend Tim Williams, the 80s Flick Flashback.
Right.
We were on the recent one that's, I think it just came out Friday, didn't it?
I did. We did Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yes.
That was fun.
And, great movie. You're also on his 100, as was I. We were not on the same team, though. We were rivals.
That's right. Tim decided he was going to have a trivia game, and a bunch of us come on with him, and we had enough people for four on each side for 80s trivia. And, of course, most of us blanked on a lot of stuff because we're put on the spot. It's like, I don't want to know this.
Yeah, the majority of us are, like, pretty well-versed in all these movies and knowledge about 80s movies. But then when we got to the actual nitty-gritty, we were like, we froze for a second,
right. You know? It's like being on Jeopardy or something.
Yeah.
Only my question I respond with is, what is Chris is too scared to remember the answer, Alex?
Exactly.
Or whoever's doing it these days.
Oh.
So I completely forgot what I said, Alex. I wasn't thinking.
Oh, it's okay.
It's not him anymore. Mayim Bialik, I think, says it sometimes.
I think she just got dropped. I think it's now the Ken Jennings guy.
The guy who was the biggest winner of all time.
Yeah, the big winner, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Well, this week we are going to tackle the movie of War Games. So, Chad, would you like to play a game?
Yes, I would.
For those of you who do not know the movie very well, so I'll give you a little brief thing here from IMDb about it. So you get a little idea. Nothing official, just something somebody who had watched it had put on here, I believe. But nope, that's not the one. Well, let's just scroll right back down. A young computer whiz kid accidentally connects into a top secret supercomputer, which has complete control over the U.S. nuclear arsenal. It challenges him to a game between America and Russia, and he innocently starts the countdown to World War III. Can he convince the computer he wanted to play a game and not the real thing? So, I don't know if that's completely accurate. I wouldn't say he was innocent. He was showing off for the girl, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
They're looking at all these things, and showed her that he had made reservations for them for, flights to Paris and everything, which turns around and bites him in the tail later. he was kind of showing off, hacking into the school computer, changing their grades, and all this good stuff. But I don't think he really meant to go that deep into it as far as hacking into the military computer network. Now, there was something about some games, if I recall, wasn't there? He was asking somebody at some shop about getting into this program. He wanted to play the games that were on it.
Yeah, like a new program had come out or was about to come out, and he wanted to sneak into them and so he played it. Play the games before anybody else, I guess. So that's why he got the phone number and the technology. I know we'll get to this, but the technology.
Was it on something else?
Yeah. He called the number for the company where they had the release of the game. And one of the numbers happened to be, I guess, the connecting number for that nuclear Whopper. Wasn't that the name of it?
They called it the Whopper. 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 I'm sure it stood for something, but yes. I don't remember hearing them saying what it was. But Whopper is how they pronounced it.
Oh, it was written on it. I just can't remember.
I can't remember either.
What it said.
I don't think I paid that close attention to it, honestly.
No.
The movie itself came out June 3rd, 1983. Stars Matthew Broderick and Ally Sheedy. Had a budget of $12 million, which was estimated, and it grossed worldwide 79,506 $567,667.
Wow.
Opening weekend, $6,227,804. So I'm not sure what it was up against. I did not get that deep into it. But it's a decent opening weekend and some decent money worldwide.
You know, for the movie. You said 83, probably Return of the Jedi was that year.
I believe so. I don't know if it was that weekend or not, though.
No, that was May, I think.
Well,
I know the original Jedi.
If it's Return of the Jedi and it came out in May, it could have been still in the theaters in June still, too.
True.
Because back in that time, there were movies that were there for months at a time sometimes.
That's true.
As long as they were doing good and selling tickets, they kept them in there.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I can say about them at that point, it's not like we had the, well, I mean, I think they were starting to come around that time. You know, I like to call them the super theaters where they got the, you know, 12 auditoriums and big screens, and three of them will go to this movie, and two will go to this one, and you got 1-1, 1-1, 1.
Right.
Or one big major one, which I guess it came later. That wasn't really until later that when the IMAX came out. In the 80s, yeah. It would be like, IMAX, what's that?
Yeah, the only thing of IMAX I remember growing up was in Atlanta, we had Fernbank Science Center, and they had an IMAX, and they only played documentaries at the time.
Did you ever in high school, or junior high school rather, I'm sorry, take a trip to the Huntsville Space and Rocket Center?
No, never did get to go to that.
I know, in Georgia, since you're in Georgia, if y'all got to do that, in Tennessee, they would take you in your seventh or eighth grade year, and they had a big IMAX screen, and the seats would lean back with you, and you would kind of watch it upwards at an angle, like, so it would feel like when you're on this, you're supposed to be like in a space shuttle, I guess, but it feels like you're on a roller coaster instead.
Right.
There's air that blows down from the ceiling down at you and everything, and you would. Yeah, it's like the seats would kind of rumble and everything with you some. But the place has been shut down for a long time now. It's a shame.
This is very interactive.
It was.
Oh, actually. there was another. It wasn't an IMAX theater, but there was at Six Flags over Georgia. There was they called it the Chevy Show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a giant screen. And they filled up the whole screen with. Like chases, you could actually go to this thing, sit down, and watch a roller coaster at a park that had lots of actual real roller coasters. But they had all kinds of things where you could there was car chase scenes, and you felt like you were actually in the movie. I think that's kind of how IMAX kind of.
I do remember some things like that going to Universal Studios, like they had the 007 ride was similar.
Oh, I don't remember.
You were chasing someone and you got on a train, and then the train is now going. You're on it, supposedly, the way it's going. The seats are all rumbling and shaking. There's the air blowing, and it's crazy. It was cool, though. But
the 007 ride. Wow. I don't remember that.
I think I don't know if it was GoldenEye or if it was or Living Day. Or it was a different one. I forget which. But it was one. It was a 007 in Universal Studios in Florida. Oh. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I only remember for that one. I only remember the Terminator ride theater, and then the Back to the Future ride. That was big when I was there.
The year that I went, they didn't have Back to the Future ride, I don't think, I just didn't get to go to it. One of the two. There was a lot of big lines. I only got like three total rides that day, and I only had the one day to go.
Oh wow.
So, but anywho, Matthew Broderick, get on the cast for a little bit here. Matthew Broderick, a lot of people would say, when you say, do you know who Matthew Broderick is? The first thing they're going to say is, do you mean, do I know who Ferris Bueller is? Bueller.
Yeah.
Bueller. But yeah, I mean, Matthew Broderick's got a great bit of work out there that he's done. And I don't think I've ever done a Matthew Broderick movie on this podcast yet to this day.
Oh, wow.
This will be the first one. I have not done Ferris Bueller yet or anything else. So this will be a good one. most well known for Ferris Bueller's Day Off, War Games, The Cable Guy. I never saw The Cable Guy either. Have you seen The Cable Guy? That was something.
Oh, yeah.
Never seen it.
That's funny. Jim Carrey's a little over the top in it compared to what he had been doing. But for sure. It was funny. I appreciate it more as an adult than the teenager when it came out. I was a teenager when it came out.
Yeah.
Like learning who Ben Stiller was and that he actually directed it and had that little movie where he plays the Menendez brothers as a little cameo kind of thing.
Yes.
That was funny. I've seen that one. It's pretty good.
One of these days, I say one of these days, Travis is always like, I can't believe you never seen this movie. I'm like, no, I've never seen this movie. Like, I had not seen Willow up until just like 2 years ago. And the same for The Princess Bride. But let's see, Max Dugan in the 80s, his work in the 80s for Matthew Broderick. Okay. Max Dugan Returns, War Games, 1918, Lady Hawk, which was a good one.
Right.
Got some television stuff here. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Project X, that was with Helen Hunt, doing something with monkeys.
The Monkees, yes.
The Monkey Project, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
She's having a baby. He's uncredited in it, though. So a small bit.
That's Ferris Bueller.
That's Ferris Bueller, actually.
That's what it says, yeah.
Biloxi Blues, Torch Song Trilogy, which I do not recognize, Family Business, and Glory. Glory was a pretty good movie for him. I think it did really well for him.
I forgot he was in that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. He was the colonel. Yeah.
Right. Now, I didn't watch a whole lot of his stuff beyond the 80s. Not going to lie. I didn't see a whole lot of it. Didn't see The Cable Guy. I did see Godzilla, but I did not watch Inspector Gadget. That's from my childhood in the cartoon, but I mean, the movie version of Inspector Gadget just did not appeal to me at all.
Yeah. It was not good.
I've heard that it really was not great at all. So I'm glad I did not invest some time into it to watch it. So, Ally Sheedy, she's had some great 80s movies as well. I'm just going to skip straight down to her 80s here. And the one that sticks out to me the most, and I know it's not the one that I've watched most of hers, that would be Breakfast Club. But
right. The
one when I think of Ally Sheedy, the first movie that comes to mind is Short Circuit.
Yes. I was hoping you'd say that.
Yes, that's the first movie that comes to mind with her.
That's the first time I had ever seen her. Short Circuit. I love that movie. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I love it. And she did like most all actors, actresses, she gets her some TV time here, TV movie, right. TV series episodes and everything. Kind of find the first big movie here that hit the big screen. I want to say it was probably going to be War Games or Bad Boys. Bad Boys is in 1983, and War Games.
Sean Penn, yeah.
So not sure which one came out first. Honestly, there it looks like they're saying Bad Boys maybe, but they're both listed 83. Breakfast Club, pretty well known for Breakfast Club and St. Elmo's Fire. Yeah. Short Circuit, Blue City, got Made to Order. That was pretty popular for her as well. And also uncredited, Ally Sheedy, and She's Having a Baby.
Wow.
What's up with this movie, She's Having a Baby? How many uncredited cameos are there in that movie?
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Short Circuit 2 in 88, and The Heart of Dixie in 89.
Yeah, it says voice uncredited. Yeah, she and Steve Guttenberg left. I know Short Circuit 2 a lot too. He plays them a message when he arrives to Ben's studio in New York, and they like have recorded a "Hey, we need you to take care of Johnny Five" and blah blah blah, and like they live in Montana.
And they
sent him to him. Yeah, sorry.
Short Circuit 2.
Yes.
Or is it Alan Fiss's 1 or 2? Which one is it where he takes off down by the little river area, determined he's going to catch the guy, and he fires his grappling hook up on this crane and swings around and comes out into the water yelling like Tarzan as he hits the guy in the boat and still knocks him out.
That's the second one. That's the second one.
Okay.
That's the climax of the second one. Yeah.
I caught the tail end of that on TV the other day. Just the other day. I was watching that. I'm like, was this one or two? It's been so long. But yeah. I guess my favorite movie of hers, though, and even though we're doing War Games today, my favorite movie of hers is the Breakfast Club, though. Character is really strange.
Oh, yeah.
But in this one, little happy-go-lucky girl, she's a one of the funniest scenes of the movie is in the classroom early on, the beginning of it. Mm-hmm. And the teacher is asking the question to the class about if they know who it was that brought out the ability to, oh my God, what was it? Was it reproduce asexually or?
Yes, asexually. It was like, who have to have children without sex?
That's what it sounded like. And he's like, his wife. She's cracking up. And he's what'd you say? So it was your wife.
the first time I didn't catch the teacher's like attitude, so I felt sorry for the when he said that joke out loud. But the second time I watched it, and like, oh, he's a jerk.
He had that coming.
Yeah, he did have that coming. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, same on him. He had that stuff coming.
So I laughed.
He flaunted the failing grade in front of the class.
Yeah, that's why I was like, okay, yeah, he's a jerk. We won't do that.
He can't be having none of that.
Mm-hmm.
Dabney Coleman. Now, Dabney Coleman, actually, you know, I had asked Chad about doing a different podcast episode to begin with. It was called Cloak and Dagger. I'm going to get to that one of these days. But that had Dabney Coleman in it as well. Dabney Coleman in the 80s was all around.
Oh, man, he did so many things. I was trying to figure out what I'd seen him first. And man, I can't remember. He did so many things.
I know what I saw him in first. I've seen him in many things, but the first movie I seen him in was 9 to 5.
That's got to be what I saw him first. Yeah, because he did a lot of TVs. He did a lot of TV in the '70s.
Yeah, and then yeah, I'm pretty sure 9 to 5 because my mom she loved 9 to 5. That movie, she'd get it a lot. When we were renting movies, she would rent that one. And again, being the boss, Franklin Hart Jr., it was not a very nice boss.
Nope.
But we're looking at his work in the 80s. We got 9 to 5. We got On Golden Pond, Modern Problems, Young Doctors in Love. He's in Tootsie.
Hmm.
And then we got up to War Games at this point in 83. Cloak and Dagger in 84, The Muppets Take Manhattan in 84.
That's got to be what I saw him first thing.
You think so?
It's got to be, because I'm a huge, huge Muppet fan. So that's got to be where I first saw him, yeah. But I did see 9 to 5.
Who's your favorite Muppet?
My favorite Muppet?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's like...
Who's your favorite Muppet, and why is it the Swedish Chef?
I do like the Swedish Chef. I liked anything that Jim Henson did. I love Kermit. I love Kermit the Frog.
Kermit the Frog
here.
Exactly.
Rolf, Dr. Teeth, you know, all I can name a majority of his stuff, but
there's a guy who just recently, I don't know how recent, but the one who took over the voices for the Swedish Chef and Rolf and Dr. Teeth and the band.
Yeah,
he's the one that also invented Pepe.
What's his last name? Starts with a B. Barello.
It might be. He's going to be in Knoxville at the Fanboy Expo.
Oh man!
In July.
And, that's right. You go to cool conventions and stuff, don't you?
Yeah, I went to the one last year, and I'm going to go to one this year.
You met the lady you interviewed. Was it Franklin?
Actually, I saw Diane Franklin. We had her on the show, but I saw her at Pensacola at the Pensacon a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah, I went down there.
You went down to Pensacon? Okay.
Yeah. My daughter lives there, too, so it's kind of a two-for-one kind of thing. I get to visit with her, and I got to go to the Pensacon as well. I saw Diane Franklin, and which was really cool because she remembered who I was in the podcast. I thought it was nice.
Awesome. Yeah.
So she's really, really cool to get along with. And I saw a few other people. It got cut short. A friend of mine that went with me got sick, and we had to end up leaving the day early. So we didn't get to see everybody, but I saw her, Charisma Carpenter, and a couple of wrestlers from the AEW wrestling, if you're into that.
Okay.
Were there, and I saw them. So the other ones I wanted to see had not yet arrived to their tables, or they were going to be day two people. I don't know which it was, but
right. It had to have been last year's Pensacon. We had my wife and I. We usually go to Dragon Con here in Atlanta every Labor Day. And 2 years ago, the one before, we saw a big sign. It had a lot of Doctor Who people who were going to be there, and I was like, I kind of want to go down there, but we cannot. We didn't have the funds to go down, and.
That's the thing for me. I have to make sure I start saving ahead of time.
Yeah.
And I also judge it by who's going to be there. If it's not going to be at least three people, then I don't want to, go to it. The only exception I would have made was last year's Nashville Comic Con. And that's because Chuck Norris was the headliner.
Wow.
And I didn't care if he was 83 years old. I was going to go meet Chuck Norris. That was one of my favorites from the 80s. And never had a chance to see him in person before anywhere. And that was my time. So I did that. And then month and a half later, that was the Fanboy Expo in Knoxville.
Okay.
So their big thing was they had Lord of the Ring people there. That was just out of my price range though. So I completely avoided it. I walked near their tables to get a glimpse of them all. And that was cool enough. But the pricing for them was through the roof. I couldn't do that. I saw somebody and got my picture made with, I think it was Ralph Macchio for the Karate Kid. I got Vicki Lawrence from Mama's Family.
Was she in her Mama's Family outfit?
She was taking pictures with people in that outfit if you wanted it.
Okay.
But I just got one of her at the table.
Right.
I mean, it would have been cool to have a picture of her as Mama from Mama's Family, but I mean,
yeah.
Just herself was, and I got to talk to her. I told her she was a part of one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life on television that I still laugh about this day and will tell people about how funny it is. The younger people who want to talk about things they just think that was funny on TV, and I'll bring it up to them all the time. And she thought that was great and thanked me for it. No, and she said, "Well, which one was it?" I said, "Siamese elephants," because I know what you're talking about right now. And I asked her, I said, how in the world did you keep from not breaking character when Tim Conway was on screen with you? And her answer was one of those you might think is like a typical answer you get from people. She's like, well, I hadn't been around long enough. I thought that I had not quite yet earned that privilege of just, breaking character on TV when I should be being more professional and all, Now the rest of them have been around for a while and they make each other laugh all the time, and that was good. And I said, yeah, but looked like you got the last word in. Made them all laugh. I said, two of them fell off the couch laughing.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, and if you haven't seen it.
Is that the one where it's a snorking.
The what?
He goes, he's like, they tried to blow their trumpet, and they go, it's a snorking.
He's like, you're a snork.
Yeah.
And he talks about the little owner. Was a midget, he said.
Wasn't
and
Dick
the elephant
Van Dyke?
Landed on him. Dick Van Dyke was in the he was in it with him. Yes. I thought it was Harvey Korman for the longest, just in memory, but looking back and watching it was Dick Van Dyke though. So see, I got her, and then I went and got Holly Marie Combs from Charmed.
Oh, okay.
And Adrian Paul from Highlander, the TV series. And the last person that I seen there was Joey Lauren Adams. She's
Chasing Amy.
Chasing Amy.
Yeah.
Mallrats, Big Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
But Chasing Amy is where I remember her from right off the bat, for sure. So, and it was cool because we stayed at the hotel right across from the convention center and she was on our floor. So we seen her like three or four times going back and forth for things. She was really nice. So I think most of them try to be, as nice as they can to people. Unless you're one of those pushy people that push yourself on them for stuff all the time. They're like, right. Nah, back up, yeah. Buddy.
Yeah, there were a lot of people staying at the hotel we stayed at last year. Apparently, we didn't see them, but apparently, you mentioned Lord of the Ring. Elijah Wood and Sean Astin both were at our hotel. We actually saw the guy. We actually saw the guy who plays the newest Spock from the Discovery and Strange New Worlds. He was. We actually saw him.
Yeah. He also plays Spock on the ones where they're like the younger versions, where Chris Pine plays as
Kirk.
Kirk. Thank Kirk. You, Captain Kirk.
Captain Kirk.
Boy, my friend Marty would kill me right now. You can't remember the Star Trek captain's name.
Yeah, he's yelling.
Captain Kirk.
He's listening. He's yelling. Yeah, Captain Kirk. Yeah, we thought we'd been in one of his panel, and then we were walking back to our hotel, and he was coming the other direction. So I was like, you know, he had mentioned in his panel because they couldn't talk about projects because the strike was going on at the time. Mm-hmm. So they talked about other things, and somebody asked, you know, well, what do you want to do while you're here? And he's like, oh, I just want to go in the city and get lost. So when we saw him, I yelled at him. I said, hey, man, are you getting lost? And he looked at me and he kind of chuckled. He said, yeah. And then we got back to our hotel. We're waiting for our car because we're going to go somewhere else. And then we saw him come back. So I'm like, his handler. Oh, apparently.
Wasn't he also on the TV show Heroes?
Yes, that's a different guy.
Different guy
who was in JJ Abrams one is a different guy. That's Zachary Quinto.
Yeah. Okay, that's who I was thinking.
He was in the one with Chris Pine.
Now, which one did you see?
His name is Ethan Hunt. He was on Discovery, Star Trek
Discovery. Okay.
And Strange New Worlds.
Discovery's the one's got the girl from Walking Dead in it, right?
Yes.
Okay. I got to be confused for a minute. I was more of a Star Wars fan than a Trekkie, but I do love the throwback Star Treks where you got like Chris Pine and them playing the younger versions.
Oh yeah.
And I watched Discovery up until the last season, and it lost me at some point.
Well, they jumped to the even farther future than what we know now. You know,
yeah.
They went even further. Yeah.
I just couldn't get into it at that point. It wasn't doing nothing for me. You mentioned the guy lost his handler or something. I'll tell you a quick story real quick, and I'll jump back to the cast before I get too far off bat here.
Right.
But I think I told this story a while back after I came back. We were in the front of the hotel getting our car. My buddy that went there. And if you watch wrestling, you might know the name the Hardy Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Matt and Jeff Hardy.
Matt and Jeff Hardy, yep.
So they were Jeff Hardy was out front. And I turned around and boom, there he was. And he's like, it's like the same time we saw each other. So not to be like, you know, rude or a fanboy or anything. Like, I'm like, well, hey, how you doing? He goes, oh, good. And yourself? I said, yeah. I said, you have a good weekend here at the con. He's like, oh, it's great. How about you? Did you see a lot of people? And I said, sure did. It was great. I said, thanks for coming. You know, have a good day. Right. So I go get in my car and then I see Matt Hardy coming out as we're getting in. Jeff Hardy is trying to put his suitcase in our trunk. And I was like, hey, buddy, wrong car, man. He goes, what? I said, wrong car. And he looked behind him. There's his handler down to the edge of the road going, man, bring it over here. Come here.
Wow.
And we almost had an extra rider there.
You almost got his ring gear.
It might have been his Comic-Con money where he signed all the autographs. One or the other.
There you go.
Oh my goodness! Where were we at here? We were at Muppet Steak Manhattan with Dabney Coleman. See, I told you this is Coleman, classic for this show. We completely go off track all the time.
Hey,
the man with one red shoe. Then he got a couple of TV movies: Return of Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. Burrow, Fresno, Guilty of Innocence, Sworn to Silence, until 87, and he brings us Dragnet. Played Jerry Caesar.
Yeah, he was the He was the porno magazine guy, right?
I think so. The only other movie I see him in is Hot to Trot.
Yeah.
And that's the only other movie Bobcat. In the theater that he was with. Yeah, with Bobcat Goldthwait. Mm. So, but he had a pretty good career, I'd say. I mean, every time I look around the 80s, I either seen him or I seen Gene Hackman. One of the two.
They look similar.
They do, you know, kind of not really look similar, but I mean, they both had the same mindset that they were constantly working. It's like there's a few out there. Okay, there's Gene Hackman, of course. I just said his name. Used to do everything. Dabney Coleman was in everything for a while. Samuel L. Jackson's in everything. Every time you turn around, you see Samuel L. Jackson in the movie. A lot of these people are like, you know, they're not real particular about the work they take. They take it because, you know, they're getting paid. They want that money. They're building that money up. Some of the things they get picky about, you know, the ones especially that are making the blockbuster money, they can afford to get picky. But
right.
John Wood played the character of Dr. Falcon, which created the supercomputer there, which he had named Joshua after his child. And like I said, John Wood. I was like, John Wood. Where have I heard the name John Wood before? Why does that sound familiar? Of course, I was confusing him with somebody else.
I always thought he was James Wood.
I was confusing him.
Thought it was somebody else. I thought it was. I for some reason thought it was either Harry Dean Stanton or somebody like, who was the British guy who I thought it was before I actually watched rewatched the movie. The guy he was in Star Trek movies, and then he was in the TV show. He did the famous Picard's famous scene of there are four lights. He was the Cardassian. Starts with a W. Warner, David Warner.
I'm not sure at all.
Yeah. Those are the two people I thought was this, but then I'm like, oh, I don't know who that guy is at all.
Well, I mean, he was in Lady Hawk as well.
Yeah, he was in Lady Hawk. Which...
Yeah, Lady Hawk. And so him and that's something him and...
Matthew Broderick, yeah.
But yeah, have in common. Mm-hmm. Both were in War Games and Lady Hawk. I don't know how much they worked together at that point, but I mean...
To go back for Daphne Coleman for one quick second, you briefly mentioned it's not an 80s movie, but Inspector Gadget. Daphne Coleman was Chief Quimby in Inspector Gadget.
There you go. Bring it back around again. Right?
There you go. So I just wanted to mention that too. That's John Wood.
So this guy, John Wood in the 80s, he's got War Games in 83. And in 81 is a TV series, BBC Two Playhouse. And there's just some video that says it's Warren Zevon. I don't know what that is. But War Games looks like the first movie in the 80s you spotted me in. The Purple Rose of Cairo, Lady Hawk, Lady Jane, Heartburn, Jumpin' Jack Flash. I had forgotten he was in Jumpin' Jack Flash. Oh, yeah. Jeremy Talbot.
Was he the guy who ended up being the guy? Like,
no.
The end?
No, he wasn't Jack. He was Jeremy Talbot. I think he was Jack's friend, or maybe I'm not sure if he was the friend or one of the main enemies now at this point.
God, it's been so long.
It's been a good while since I've seen this movie, but it was so funny. I'm not a huge Whoopi Goldberg fan, but that movie right there, as far as her movies go, was that one and the movie Eddie. They got me for her.
I was always a big for Whoopi. I was Sister Act.
Oh, Sister Act, yeah. Forgot Sister. The first one,
of course.
The second one was all right. It was pretty good. Not knocking it.
No.
But the first one was better for me. Then he's got some TV miniseries. Then that's it for the 80s. He moves into the 90s at that point. So I'm not going to say he had a stellar 80s, but he had a few good movies that I liked.
Right.
At that point. Now, the other people that are in the movie, I'm going to leave it up to you here. Can you see anybody else you want to bring up and talk about for a second? There's a couple of them that have been in other movies for sure, such as Barry Corbin. And
Oh, yeah. Got to talk about Barry Corbin.
I mean, Barry Corbin, he's always the role of a general or some ranch owner, it seems like, don't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was in the Netflix TV show, The Ranch, with Ashton Kutcher and Sam Elliott. Right. He was like their neighbor. He was so funny in that show. Like, I'm like,
he's a funny guy, though, does he?
No, like it came out of like nowhere, because you know you see him in these roles. He did have one of the most funniest line in this movie. Can I go ahead and say the line?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
One of the funniest lines.
I mean, it's not exactly like we're not anything goes, but I mean, we're like a PG, but things slip sometimes.
Right. Well, it's not. I'll kind of censor it a little bit, but he said I'd urinate on a spark plug if I thought it would help.
Right. Well, they won't let the kid get on the computer, but they don't want to let him on at first.
Yeah.
He's, you know, speaking of The Ranch, he was also in Yellowstone as well for an episode.
That's right. Because we saw and I was like, oh, I loved him in The Ranch, and we loved Yellowstone. So, yeah.
Now, have you seen I know we're straying again, but have you seen the new TV series Tulsa? Because he's in Tulsa King as well for 5 episodes. But have you seen Tulsa King? I have not watched that yet.
With
I've been meaning to sit down and watch this, and I keep forgetting to do it. Maybe tonight will be my night. I mean, it can't be that much of it to catch up to.
No, it's pretty. It moves pretty quick. It's a pretty good show. I've heard they're actually. I think they announced they're going to be filming here in Atlanta for season 2.
Really?
So I am. Yeah.
For
I'm trying to get into the background work, so I'm trying to figure out how I can get to be a background actor. And
now for Tulsa King
show,
you said for Tulsa King or in Atlanta?
Yeah, that's what I heard. They're going to film, which is weird. They film all kinds of things here in Atlanta for that are not Atlanta. You know, Marvel, Avengers Endgame and all that stuff here. We sat in for New York, apparently.
See, you got to learn how to get in the, like you said, on the whole background thing. That's what you got to do right there.
Yeah. Why? Well,
Hold on. I just had the thought hit me. Have you not done some background stuff before already?
Yeah. Well, I've been an audience member for the Family Feud.
That's it. Yeah. I remember Tim telling me that. Yes, that was it.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a podcast to. Hey, well, he has a podcast, so that was the only thing we could come up with. Well, we'll just mention that. Yeah. So.
Survey says.
And you got a clap. Oh, and if it's wrong, you have to go. Oh, and then clap like, yay, you're not an idiot.
You tried. Or they give you an outlandish answer, and you're like, good answer.
Yeah. It's like, even though it's stupid, you have to be like, this is the best answer in the whole world.
Some of the answers they give, man, some of it's crazy. You know, the guy we're talking about, and I've forgotten he was in Any Which Way You Can in Stir Crazy. He was the warden in Stir Crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Any Which Way You Can, he played the role of Fat Zach. Got a lot of TV series on there. Quite a bit of TV series. Now, that's the other place I remember from, Six Pack. The Sheriff in Six Pack.
Oh, filmed here in Atlanta as well at Atlanta Motor Speedway.
Yeah.
With Kenny Rogers, right?
Right. We just did an episode on that one about a month and a half, 2 months ago for Six Pack. And I believe I might have talked Tim into bringing that one up in the future. And I think I might have signed up for that one.
Yeah, I think it was on his little list there.
But it's always the same kind of person. He's an army guy, or he's a sheriff, or man, he's always on a ranch. Dude. Yeah, he's all up for he can't get away from that.
Right,
that's one thing for sure. I've looked into doing voiceover work. You talk about getting background work. I've been looking into voiceover work.
Right.
Well, voiceover work is fine, but I mean, I'm gonna be the typecasted for one kind of voice. I mean, I don't do accents. except for the one accent that I have, obviously. You know, I mean, I can be silly like Travis to get on here and do my movie man voice or my game show host voice or something, but I mean, everybody in the world does something like that. And you would think it'd be kind of, it sounds like it's cool to get into, but it's a lot of competition there too. It's hard to get into it, you know, to get something given to you that somebody who's got 10 years experience already won't get ahead of you or something. But one of these days, you never know.
That's right.
One of these days. So I'll throw one more out there. You brought up Barry Corbin, Michael Ensign. He is a lot of bit roles in movies. He's always someone's friend, someone's aide, someone's helper. Yes. He was the aide to Barry Corbin in War Games, to the general.
Right. The guy with the mustache. He had a mustache. Yeah,
had a mustache.
Okay.
His current picture I'm looking at, it's no mustache. But
no.
Yeah, he'd been in quite a few things in the past, but they're always bit pieces here and there, it seemed like. So I thought that's definitely worth bringing up for sure.
Yes. Ghostbusters, the guy at the hotel,
mm-hmm.
who he's like, make sure you do it very discreetly.
One other person is James Tolkien.
Ah, Principal Strickland.
Strickland himself. Yes.
Yes.
Or if you're a Masters of the Universe fan, you know, the guy from there played the cop trying to bust him and everything.
The one not in the cartoon or the toy.
That movie, yeah. The one that was not part. Yeah. But you know, they later on went and made toys of him though.
That's true.
They did. They want to capitalize all they could on that. When not for the cartoon Gwildor. The Orko replacement Gwildor. Yeah. They didn't have the ability to pull Orko off without spending more money. Cheapskates. Right. Anywho.
But they gave that little person a good role.
Yeah.
What was his name? Billy Batson?
Billy Barty.
Billy Barty, that's right.
Yeah, he's one to play Will.
Billy Batson.
I know who Billy Batson is.
That's the Shazam. And
yes.
Whoops. Okay.
Two different movies altogether.
Well, yeah.
He's going to play Gwildor, the guy who created the cosmic key. And when you hear his voice, you know who he is automatically. Absolutely. If you see him without all the makeup and stuff on, you'll hear him talk and you'll go, "Oh, that's dude from Willow." Well, he's also Gwildor from Masters of the Universe. Well, he's also so and so from Under the Rainbow. He's in Foul Play. He's in this movie. He's in that movie.
He did a lot. Detective Lubick in Masters of the Universe.
Lubick. There you go. Lubick.
Yeah.
A couple of, before I dive into the trivia section here, now, I know Tim always asks this question. I've got the habit of asking it some a lot too, but I know you watched it. You rewatched it today. Did you see this at the theaters when it came out, or was it one of those things for TV or maybe a rental for you?
This was a rental. Had to be a rental. Yeah, I was 83. I was 4. So I was a little.
Well, you're old enough to go to a movie by yourself. Come on.
Well, it's funny. My wife was. Her parents took her to a lot of movies when she was even a child. Like she was born in 77. So she was February, March, April, May. She's 4 months old sitting in the theater for Star Wars.
We took my daughter when she was not even a year old. We went to go watch Planet of the Apes. Luckily, she slept through most of it.
The Tim Burton one? Well, the original ones.
No, I guess Tim Burton, one with Marky Mark in it.
Yeah.
Mark Wahlberg.
That's it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but she saw a lot of rated R movies. She saw Poltergeist in the theaters with her parents as a very young child. And I don't know if she saw this one or not. Possibly.
To me, it was definitely a rental, but it was it's back whenever we had the video disc players, and I brought this up in the past before. Do you remember video disc players, by the way?
Laserdisc. I remember Laserdisc.
Not Laserdisc. This is the early 80s version before of Laserdisc, that. Basically.
No.
They had these big square, looks like maybe the movie poster might have been the cover of it. Okay, you can look it up and Google it real quick and see what I'm talking about. Video disc players, early 80s or something. And you would put the disc itself into the opening of the video disc player and then pull the case back out, and that's side one. Halfway in the movie, it stops and tells you to flip the disc over. So you put the case back in, pull it out, flip it, put it back in, pull it out, and watch the back side of the movie. It's crazy.
Right. I got to pull it up right here.
You got to see for yourself now, right?
Yeah. Like, I remember...
You can still buy them on eBay, too. I saw some for sale on eBay.
Oh, it actually slides into the actual player itself.
Yes, and they're these big... Like, I'm looking right now, I can see someone's got one on Poshmark. It says really cool collector's vintage video disc. Blah, blah, blah. It looks like it's Star Wars, the first one. And then it was $68 bucks for it. Then there's a stack of other ones, the Mega Collection, Selectivision. Looks like a player and some discs. They want $999 for it. An old stack of discs for $50. Wow. I mean, so those are the things you'd put them in. It would take the disc out. You pull it out and set it down and hit play. It plays the first half of the movie. So I made great use of this in a lot of movies, because some of the movies I wanted to rent and watch when I was younger, I didn't want to get the buildup out of it. I just wanted to get action stuff. So like say Rocky III, for example, right. I would go straight to the backside of it and put it in. And it starts with the training montage with him and Apollo Creed. That's where it starts, and it goes from there. So I'm getting all the good stuff. All the good stuff there.
Okay.
But yeah, that's how I watched it the first time.
Yeah, I'm
that many years old, everybody.
Okay. I grew up in the VHS. Well, my grandfather had a VHS player that. With the top loader, you mm-hmm. put it in and then you pushed it down.
Yep.
Your channels were actual buttons on the actual to watch or record or whatever.
The VHS and those video discs came out shortly before VHS. They were very short lived.
Okay.
It just didn't, I don't think it made sense to them financially when they could make the VHS and VCRs. And then because those sold for cheaper than what the video disc players did.
And so that's why they tried again with Laserdisc, probably like later
went
on.
Went back to Laserdisc later on. And that was after CDs came out.
Yeah.
And they said, well, let's put movies on CDs, put movies on discs again. We've done this in the past before. We can redo it.
Right.
Do you remember when they were getting there at the end of it and they crashed the Jeep when we go into the fence?
Yes.
That was an accident. That was truly an accident that it turned over. It was supposed to just go through it and keep going. But they kept the take and got them to get out and just start running.
So yeah, I thought that was so weird. Why, like, I don't know. Like, why did they do that?
Right. It's made more sense driving on there. Well, what happened? You know, they just ran through a gate.
They ran into it. Like, it wasn't one of those, like, it didn't even look like a stunt. I guess that's why it went wrong, because it didn't do possibly. What it was supposed to.
Possibly. I don't know. It said the studio had the Galaxian from 1979 and Galaga in 1981 arcade machines delivered to Matthew Broderick's home. He practiced for 2 months to prepare for the arcade scene.
Oh,
that's got to be a hard life here as a kid right there. Right. You got to play a video game for 2 months that you probably already liked anyway. And you got for free sent to your home. You know, just so you can prepare for what, a 2 minute scene.
Yeah.
I don't get that one. Okay.
Oh, and let's talk about the technology in his room.
Yes, please bring that up.
He had it's so modern, but like today, like even the war room, like computers and stuff, like it was, everything was like, what is that called? The before Windows came out, it was the text, and you typed in all of your text and you would bring
DOS. Stuff.
DOS. Yeah, everything looks so, like, everything was DOS, it seemed like.
Yeah. And then, it's also cool, though, because you're like, when you're typing in the commands and stuff, you feel like you're truly a hacker, even though you're not. You know, I can hack my way to that to get you to the folder you need. Hold on, change directory.
I wonder
change folder.
I wonder if they use some of that equipment for was it Weird Science? Because they had the phone, you know, he had the phone thing for his to hack with too.
I mean, it's and about the same time frame when they came out, so
right.
It's possible. I mean, if
probably
anything,
not exactly the same, but yeah.
If anything, if it's not the exact same props, it's from the same time frame when they would use similar props and everything. And so, but he had everything going on. He had where they had the dial up. Not dial up internet, but I mean when you would dial to connect to another computer with your phone. He had the tape recorder too, didn't he? Along with the old dot matrix printer.
Yes.
I mean he had everything going there. I mean if you think it's funny when you see a Commodore 64 somewhere, think pre Commodore 64. Shortly, probably before Commodore 64, and how that would look. Or maybe you know, it was just really crazy. I'm looking at my computer and I'm thinking, no, I couldn't do none of the stuff on that computer that I had on mine. Nope. But then again, they say they went to the moon with like 4 megabytes of of space on a hard drive or something, right? So, I mean, if you can go to the moon on 4 megabytes of hard drive, why can't you have a good computer like that at home?
Exactly.
The NORAD command center built for the movie cost $1 million.
Wow.
Making it the most expensive set ever constructed at that time. Producers were not allowed into the actual NORAD command center, so they had to imagine what it was like. I wondered when watching this, because it's built into the side of a mountain. Is NORAD built into the side of a mountain? I don't know.
It probably is. Or below, like under the mountain, maybe?
It says here in the DVD commentary, director John Badham noted that the actual NORAD command center isn't nearly as elaborate as the one in the movie, calling the set NORAD's wet dream of itself.
And that, now it's probably like two guys with their cell phones.
Probably. Dude, my iPhone's down. How about yours? Well, that's why you should get an Android like me, okay? There we go.
At least they had both. That's nice.
Right. Well, that's why I put it out there for both of them. The movie includes the first cinematic reference to a firewall, a security measure used in computer networking and internet security. The Whopper, as seen in the movie, was made of wood and painted with a metal finish paint. As the crew filmed the displays of the Whopper, special effects supervisor Michael Fink sat inside and entered information into an Apple II computer that drove the countdown display.
It seemed to me that they used the same when they did the panning of the Whopper, when they went around it, that it was the same shot every time.
Right.
Like it was doing whatever it was doing, thinking, but it looked like it was the same pan around.
It felt like it probably
and
was.
It ended on the name, which is weird because they did that several times. Like, I really wish I remember what the name of what Whopper stood for, because they stopped at it every time they did that shot.
I bet you we can find it here in just a second. Did you know that hacking was not actually illegal when that movie came out? I mean, computers haven't been out that long. Think about it. I mean, they haven't been out that long. So, I mean, how much of actual did you know about hacking and what it was they were doing and stuff maybe at that time? But it says that didn't happen until the Comprehensive Crime Control Act of 1984. And further expanded by the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act of 86. They really kind of got serious about it then. So let's see here. The tunnel and exterior used for the entrance to NORAD is located in Griffith Park, L.A. The same tunnel was used to enter and exit Toontown in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, wow.
And in the climax of Back to the Future Part 2.
Okay.
There's a example
being chased
what you're talking about
on the hoverboard.
Yep.
Sorry, that's one of my favorite movies, all three of them. So,
Back to the Future.
Yes.
And Roger Rabbit.
I like Roger Rabbit a lot. I've signed on to be on Tim's episode of that too. So
I actually like Roger Rabbit, but it was the first time I had watched it when we did the podcast. I had never seen it. Yeah, I've never seen it. So it's one of those. The computer in David's room. Okay, yeah. let's get down to it now.
Okay.
The computer in his room is an IMSAI 8080. I think that's pretty what it says. I don't think it's a one. IMSAI 8080. According to the person who supplied the computer, Matthew Broderick saved a shooting day by figuring out a programming sequence with a keyboard on his own after instructions were lost. I don't even know that brand name. I never even heard of that. I remember hearing Commodore 64s and Tandy 1000s and the Apple IIe computers that we ought to be on in school doing the Oregon Trail bit.
Right.
I remember all that, but
yeah.
Not that one, though.
The first person that I knew had a computer, and this was, gosh, this was 93, 94. And which is a whole lot later, but he had like the first internet, like his dad worked for the government. So his dad like was able to get online. So we would see like Beavis and Butthead videos. I remember being in his room and other things. He did show me other things, which I won't talk about right now, but, cause apparently you can get on that, get those too. But
apparently that's been around for a long time.
I think so. Well, I was going to say, you know, we were talking about video disc and, you know, laser disc and all that stuff. I've heard that whatever technology the porn industry wants to go with, like they are the ones who chose Blu-ray when it was Blu-ray versus, was it HD DVD or whatever it was. They chose that. They chose VHS over Betamax. And it's like, whatever they choose is what usually people that, I don't know why that is.
So that's who we have to thank for our DVDs and everything.
Yeah. I think it's because they're the ones who make a lot of money because people pay a lot of money to get that stuff. So, and they figure, well, if they can do it and get money out of it, so can we. So
it is definitely a huge money-making business online.
Yes.
I remember I told my mom not too long ago, I said, whenever computers first came out, I said, I had a friend from high school was telling me this. He said, you know, we ought to go ahead and do that, make our own website for that. And, you know, those things make a ton of money. I said, and I told her, she laughed at me. I said, my mom would kill me if she found out that we put one of those things together. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. He goes, are you not a grown man? I said, her favorite thing to say is she brought me in this world. She'd be the first one taking me out.
Me out, yeah. My mom says the same thing.
I think I'll pass on that. You enjoy yourself there, buddy.
Right.
The computer named Whopper was actually a joke based on a real computer. You're going to like this. A real computer NORAD once used to predict war strategies. The real computer was BRGR.
BRGR. Burger. Burger. Okay. So that's why they called it Whopper. Okay.
I guess so. I don't know if it actually stood for anything now. It may not stand for anything at all now. It may just to be make fun of it. I don't know, but I still can't find it. A video game version of this movie was made in 84 for the ColecoVision, Commodore 64, and Atari 8-bit computer. The game started out greeting you as Professor Falcon, and you would play a game of global thermonuclear war. Your objective was to stop nuclear war from occurring by protecting the country with various military vehicles and weapons in a set time limit without reaching DEFCON 1.
Okay. Right. And if you were successful, the game would blow up.
Probably. Barry Corbin ad-libbed most of his lines. Well, I mean, he had very few lines, though. I mean, why not? The spark plug thing was genius, sir.
Yes.
Need more of that. Falcon's home was built on a soundstage at MGM Studio. Most of the set pieces are from Little House on the Prairie, 1974, in old dinosaur movies.
The island with no boat.
What kind of idiot makes an island with no boat? Says the kid who's almost run down with the helicopter that the idiot was flying. Let me tell you, the rich idiot who can afford the helicopter doesn't need the boat.
That's right. He has a helicopter.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Here's some more information on some of their computers they have in the movie. The dual 8-inch floppy drive is an IMSAI FTC2 monitor. I'm sorry, FTC2. The monitor is a 17-inch electro home. The keyboard is an IMSAI 1KB-1. And the, check this out. They were fast. The 1200 baud modem on top of the monitor that he had was a Thermatec 212A relabeled with the name IMSAI. 1200 baud modem. I mean, I was super cool when I had my 14.4, you know, I mean, or my 28.8 baud modem. They had 1200. And I think I'm going to give up on the other one. We'll have to look it up later. If I find it, I'll put it in the show notes or something. I guess that's about what I'll have to do. But anywho, we're at our closing point. Actually, we're a few minutes over, but I went over a little bit to read off some of these, interesting things about the movie and everything.
War Operation Plan Response.
War Operation
Plan Response.
Plan Response. There you go, people. There's your Whopper. Now, what burger stands for?
I don't know.
Two all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
There you go.
Or did that computer do things your way right away?
I was going to say, why didn't Burger King jump on that to get sponsored?
Maybe they did. I don't know.
Like,
you're talking about a long while ago. I mean, and they may have had something to do with it.
Like the opening scene when he's at, you know, playing Gattaca at the restaurant there.
Mm-hmm.
Like that could have been. Well, I don't know. Pizza Hut was more the place you can go play video games while you eat. But
when did Burger King's become prevalent though?
I don't. Sometime in the '80s. I'm not sure.
Let's see.
A good question. When did Burger King start?
I mean, it was founded way in early. I mean, it was around for a long time before the movie started. So it there was always that possibility they could have done that if they wanted to.
1954 in Miami, Florida. Yep. So yeah, so they were around.
Yep. So I'm saying they've been around. They had the opportunity.
Who did Where's the Beef? Was that?
That's Wendy's.
Oh, that's Wendy's. That is one of Wendy's. Okay.
Yeah. The grumpy old lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's the beef? Big old giant bun, a little tic-tac looking size hamburger in there. You're going to come back on again one day, okay? We got to find some more to do.
Absolutely.
It's been a good time with this one here. So we're going to find another one to get you in on. And, I mean, who knows? We might even bring you on one you've already done with Tim in the past or something. So you're fully prepared for it already. You want to watch it or anything. Then.
There you go.
I mean, who knows? But, it's been great. This movie is one of my all-time 80s favorites. Probably if I'm going by in my top 10 80s is definitely in the top 10. I don't know if it's quite in my top five, but it's in my top 10 for sure. So I've been waiting for a while to do this one. Travis was not a huge fan of this movie, so I told him I was going to get this one in Cloak and Dagger in when he wasn't around.
There you go. I've not seen Cloak and Dagger. I mean, I know what it is. I know it's got Dabney Coleman, of course. And was it Henry Thomas?
Henry Thomas. I will tell you, if you haven't seen it, I mean, I'm not saying watch it for the sake of coming back to do that movie like we were going to do originally. But just if you get a chance to sit down and watch it, I think you'll enjoy it based on the kind of movies that we have watched already and talked about in past podcasts and stuff between us and Tim and everything and stuff I know you've seen. I think you'll like it. Pretty fun.
Check it out.
It's one of those movies like this. Like I was telling Travis, I want to get movies like War Games, Cloak and Dagger, Tank, Any Which Way You Can, Every Which Way But Loose, Six Pack. A lot of these we've already done. Some of them we haven't, but these are the movies that you loved back in the '80s when they were out. Yeah. But as the years have gone by, people have kind of forgotten about them in a way until someone brings it up. And they're like, Any Which Way You Can. And then the person goes, Right Turn, Clyde. And they're like, oh, that movie. Okay, yeah, you know. I said, those are the kind of movies I want to bring back on here a lot of.
Right.
You know, so what to find something else. If not, you know, Cloak and Dagger, if you get a chance to watch it and you want to come back and do that when we will, or We'll find another one. We'll
wait. Sounds good, man.
So if you're listening to the show for the first time, make sure you hit that follow button and keep up with us on a week-to-week basis. If you will take a moment for us and go to iTunes, you can do a small review, which really helps the show out. And on Spotify, they give you the ability, once you start watching, or I mean listening, not watching, to the podcast, and you can give a star rating system there. So a great 5-star rating for Mr. Chad Shepard would be great, I think. I mean, that's awesome. He would really appreciate that. His first time on the show, and he got a 5-star rating. I would definitely endorse that and say it's perfect. That's bringing on, for sure. You can find us on, let's see, I hit mostly Instagram and Facebook. I'm trying to get into TikTok a little bit. I just, time, and I have no time. The word time means nothing to me because I have none of it. It's hard to get it in there, but I do try. If you are looking to follow us, let's see, we've got, Chad, I'm drawing a blank for the first time in a while. We are on iTunes. We're on Spotify. We're everywhere where you get your major podcast at. If you want to listen to us on a web browser online, that would be www.retrolife4u.com. And you can also listen to the past episodes on there as well. Archive is out there. So if you want to get back into some of our historical shows we did, by all means, dig into them. You'll enjoy them as well, I hope. So, Chad, you want to leave us with anything where they can find you out there and stuff? I know you got some possibilities of doing a podcast, you said, one day.
Yeah, one day. I'm like you guys. I love movies from like the 80s, 70s, 90s, and it's probably going to be in that vein. I'm trying to rack my brain what not to like. I can't do an amalgamation of all y'all's guys' podcasts and like something, but I have an idea, and I'm going to see how it goes. I was meaning to talk to Tim about it when we actually saw each other in person. I was actually in a musical, and he did the sound for it, and we actually got to talking, and I was about to tell him about it, and we couldn't, and I hadn't been able to talk to him, but it's going to be movie ready, because that's my bread and butter. I love movies, so.
I don't think you get enough of them, really. I mean, it's always fun hearing different perspectives from people.
Exactly.
Because the way that we do it on this show and talk about things is going to be a different way that Tim describes it on his.
Right.
And which will probably be a different way that you may do it on yours. Everybody's going to bring something unique to the table in the way they describe something. And especially if it's something that they really liked that the other person thought was okay, but they might not have liked as much.
Fingers crossed that they'll get going. I have equipment and stuff that my wife got me for Christmas and my birthday, so I'm looking forward to getting something started. So,
all right. Well, if you don't, you always get the fallbacks. You know, you got the you got the Retro Life for you. You got the 80s flashbacks, people. You know,
I've been on Laramie Wells' podcast as well. The Moving Panels. I've been on. I'm supposed to be on. There's a guy named James who does a horror podcast, The Virgin. Horror Virgin podcast, where you don't watch a movie and you watch it for the first time, then talk about it. Like you talk about what you think is going to happen, and then you watch it for the first time. And
so you find a movie that you haven't seen.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you, it's got to be something more or less new then, not the older stuff.
The one he and I've been talking about, he asked me what I had not seen, and the horror movie that I've not seen is the original Omen. And I was like, I really want to see that, but I'm not. And he's like, well, I want to do that one. But he's been busy, and I get it. And I'm busy, well, too, sometimes.
It's like I said a while ago, there's not enough time in the world.
No.
it's just not.
And that's kind of where my podcast is going to be. I want to do like a randomizer and randomly pick a year. And then pick 5 movies and have the guest host like pick one. That's kind of where I was actually going to lead to, like a little bit of randomness.
Yeah. But
then, you know, at least you'll know the year, and then you can pick I found a randomizer online, and so, well, maybe I could do something like that. So that's kind of what I'm leaning towards. So
Well, that's a fun way of doing it. I mean, yeah, for sure. And then you can both, I don't know if you'll go off, if just off memory or rewatch it the day before. That's the kind of thing that we do here. We'll do like the rewatch and we'll reminisce about it after. Probably. So it's the first time I've seen it since then, but you know, but yeah. Oh, well, great. But make sure you let us know when you get it going.
Yeah, we'll do, man.
We'll get that there for you.
All right.
So, all right. Well, thanks again one more time for coming on the show. For those of you who are listening, be sure to share us with your family and friends. And we'll see you guys on the next week's episode. So, have a good one.